Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
Hey everyone, welcome to Webcology on WMR.fm. This is recorded live to podcast on the 5th of June, 2025. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media, Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls.
Hello, everybody.
And before we go any further, we are so sorry about last week. Illness, overwork, overstress, and just a week that completely got away from both Christine and me, and we didn't get an episode up. We're going to get a special interview up or something. We are so very sorry for missing last week. But
Christine sounded like a goose in heat.
But Christine sounded like a goose in heat, you see. So
Yeah, I was bronchitis. I couldn't talk without coughing. So my fault.
See, I wasn't going to say it that way, but, you know, now that you mentioned it.
Yeah, pretty much like that.
Okay, before we go any further, congratulations to SEO 101, one of the last remaining shows along with us from the olden days, from the old Webmaster Radio days. SEO 101 is going to be recording, or has already recorded, it's really hard to tell with these guys, their 500th episode. Congratulations to Ross Dunn and Scott Van Ack, the two hosts of SEO 101, and you know, congratulations to everyone who's been involved in SEO 101 over the years. SEO 101, like Webcology, is one of the oldest podcasts, continuous podcasts on the internet. I remember SEO 101 back in 2007 when Darren Babin, the owner and head poobah of WMR.fm, was hosting it. Mikkel Demib Svensson, who we recently interviewed a couple weeks ago, used to host SEO 101. Chris Boggs used to host SEO 101, and the late great John Carecut used to be a host on SEO 101. So, you know, everyone who's been involved in the whole process, congratulations. 500 episodes is a hell of an achievement. What it's worth, we got there like, I don't know how long ago, but we're at like eight something or nine something. Do you have any idea where we're at, Christine?
I was around there, yeah, because I've looked at it before. And we are legitimately one of the longest continuously running podcasts online. Like, I think we're like one of 10 that have been running since that time when I looked it up.
We would be a credible answer at a pub trivia contest.
Yes, we definitely would.
Absolutely. I think, you know what, I think the real longest running podcast is Leo LaPonte's. After that, it's Miss Jules, and then we're right in there.
Yeah, we're right in there. Yeah, there's a couple that were longer, but not many.
Okay, so congratulations, SEO 101. You are one of the oldies as well, and you're still going. So yay. Crypto Twitter, eh? Twixter Twitter. X is it's restoring service after going dark last Friday, getting itself together. And there's speculation that Twitter went down because they're adding to it, making it bigger and more serviceable. But in doing so, given that they don't have as many engineers or, you know, safety techs as they should have, they
took a little nap.
Well, I'm trying to phrase it in a way that makes sense. Their API, their programming interfaces. When you're making a major change, there's a lot of stuff you have to touch and change. And, you know, if you want to have like continuous 24/7 seamless service, well, you can't have all of that if you don't have enough engineers and techies and people to keep up with all the jobs that are going to get done. But anyway, The disruption has probably ended or is petering out. Most APIs will start working again as X's engineers get to them. This is, again, why you don't lay off 2/3 of your workforce.
Yeah, a little bit.
But anyway, so yeah, the great X outage is probably solving itself.
Yes, it started 5 days ago, but it should be resolved at this point. But it was noticed on crypto Twitter, which I honestly didn't know was a thing. Not like there's a section in crypto. There's like literally a crypto Twitter. So, finding it interesting.
Okay, I'll bite. What's a crypto Twitter?
I don't know.
Okay.
I didn't get a chance to look into it. It just said crypto Twitter. And as I read it, I was like, it's not like crypto, like a hashtag crypto. They're saying there's a section, a place called crypto Twitter. I don't know if there's a separate Twitter for crypto people that I've just not heard of, which the amount of stories we do a week would be really weird, but possible.
So, it's a mighty big web.
Yeah, it is a mighty big web. So, but either way, that's it. That's what they first noticed. So I was like, oh, I'm gonna have to go look and see what crypto Twitter is after we get off today.
Okay, so I've heard this one from other SEOs, but I have not seen it on any of the websites I'm responsible for. Drop in Google indexing pages since May 2025. I've heard people complaining about this, but I'm working with 6 major websites at the moment, and not one of them has seen this issue.
Yeah, so some people were reporting, on social and asking Barry about, they were losing like so many pages. I've seen some of the graphs, like they lost 60%, 70% of indexed pages. I will say, I have a feeling, but I have no data to prove this, but just statements from Sundar, from CEO of Google in the last 2 weeks. He said they can detect AI content. They're trying to decrease AI content. So it could be AI content or low quality content. It's just not, it's getting removed from the index because they don't need it. And it's bad for their models, for the large language models. AI and low quality are bad for their models. So it's possible it's just happening to those kind of sites, because a lot of people are saying what you are is like, my sites are fine. I haven't seen any de-indexing. Other people are seeing, 50, 60, 70%. So I would assume either that or they have major technical issues and Google doesn't want to deal with the pages anymore, which happens.
Okay. You know what? I'm going with your first theory over your second theory, although there's if you do have technical issues and longstanding technical issues, Google is going to start slowly petering out how often it crawls and how frequently in depth it crawls, and eventually you're going to find yourself out of the index. But for Google to drop a hammer like that on how many websites all at once, and it's all a technical thing, and it just happened like in May 2020, that doesn't sound right, because there was some sort of series of updates or something. But a content thing makes total sense.
Yeah, and it exactly, because normally that happens during a core update. They usually are they're usually technical in nature. The ones I recover, almost always technical in nature, like a big cleanup where the core updates are like, all these sites have technical issues, we don't want to deal with it anymore, so bye-bye. But I think it's probably low quality or AI content, but until we see more, I wouldn't know that for sure. That's just purely an educated guess right now.
Yeah, so again, I've not seen major disruption in indexing. The disruption I did see in indexing in the last 6 months was absolutely a technical issue. But I don't think it's a technical issue that affected a gajillion other similar websites. In fact, I think the competition took great advantage of it. for reals. Okay. So, we got to travel over the abyss every once in a while. If you fly over the abyss, you look into the abyss, you risk becoming the abyss. Well, we're kind of the anti-abyss, but the abyss does exist. And this one is really scary. Astute listeners, people who pay a lot of attention, have already heard the story. Really astute listeners have already realized the implications of the story. And if you haven't, that doesn't mean you're not terribly astute, but you really, really, really should think about this story. Yeah. So I don't even know. I think the smart place to begin is with Doge acquiring all the information from all U.S. government servers they could possibly get their hands on, and then feeding it into Peter Thiel's machine, Palantir. Palantir is a information slicing and dicing machine. It
massive data miner, one of the biggest in the world, used by nation states, including ours.
Yeah, it creates databases of whole populations. And Palantir is being used to create a database of, at the very least, the U.S. public, U.S. citizens, everything, you know, everything that is in Treasury or that the IRS has on you, or the Education Department, or any of the departments out there. That's, you know, all be put into individualized, personalized, and highly identifiable databases.
It's a product they call Foundry. There are four federal agencies: Department of Homeland Security, Health and Human Services, and they didn't list the other two, unfortunately.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
Thank you. That makes sense. Yeah. What they're doing. So just to back up just 1 second, so people know who don't know. Peter Thiel, who is the founder of this, wrote a paper about how giving women the right to vote destroyed capitalism. He presented it at Stanford when he was there. So he also has alt-right views, which is the khaki pants way of saying white nationalist.
He's a Nazi. No, I'm not in the country. He's a Nazi. Peter Thiel is a Nazi.
Yeah, and he's published. And the thing is, this isn't us saying this. He's published papers and documents and had meetings with people in these groups. So it's a very well-known thing in small circles. Should be a bigger known thing, because personally, I don't think someone like this should ever been given this kind of power in the country with all the government contracts, because you can't pass a security clearance with these kind of things on your record. But if you have a product, they'll let you sell the product and skip that clearance.
Peter Thiel was the founder of PayPal, one of the original founders, along with characters like Elon Musk and Wes Andreessen and other parts of the what's called the PayPal Mafia universe.
Yeah, he's also part of the Technic crew that loved the writings of a guy named, how do we say it, Yarvin?
Gavin Yarvin, Curtis Yarvin, sorry, outright fascist philosopher that many of the tech bros have modeled their personal philosophies on.
Yeah, it's called Technate, and if you Google that, you'll find some really good articles on the rise of Technate, this ideology. But they believe basically the whole world should be like a feudal system, if you want to compare it to something from the past, but with tech bros who have CEOs that run countries, as opposed to governments. And so basically your king is going to run your country, and you're going to run everything through their blockchain and crypto networks, and they will rule the world. So that's their belief. That's a very simplified version. But if you look up Technate, you'll see it with PayPal Mafia all as part of that. Because PayPal was originally developed to disrupt fiat currency. It wasn't made as a payment processor. It was supposed to disrupt the world. Yeah.
And which they're trying to do again through, you know, through crypto.
I just want people to have the history. Yeah.
So that's who Peter Thiel is. That's his background. He's a really, 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 really nasty character. And he's also pretty much the puppet master behind, well, believe it or not, he's the puppet master behind Elon Musk. Musk and might eclipse him in wealth, but Thiel eclipses Musk in just nasty ass ideology.
Yeah, and he also is behind J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance only worked for Peter Thiel, and then Peter Thiel funded his Senate race.
There you go.
So
Peter Thiel was you know, one of the people behind the worst government money could buy scheme. And he has, again, a data mining machine called Palantir, which you will soon be a part of if you're an American citizen. And there's speculation that Palantir will also go to work on databases of foreign nationals that are held on Amazon Web Services or other American-held digital properties that are, you know, of course, subject to the Patriot Act. So there's, you know, my information may end up in this database. I'm not an American citizen. Anyone who's had a connection with America, if you're a foreign vendor and filed a tax form, your tax form is registered with the IRS. You're part of this database.
And normally these databases don't talk to each other, but the problem is they sold this product as just like a data product, you know, to help modernize government. But the problem is, because they're one product under Thiel, they can all talk to each other. And so the foundry is able to compile more information. Now, I don't know where this falls legally, and I haven't had a chance to look it up, but I do know the NSA, because they gave a talk at DEF CON, and they were banned from DEF CON for years after they gave this talk. But the NSA said, we're not allowed to collect information on American citizens and before a crime, and then and look at it, but we can collect all the information and not look at it until there's a crime. And that was how they were going to get around the law. Mm-hmm. And of course, that was after it got in public light and sunshine sprayed all over it. That all got defeated because there's such public outrage. Like I said, they got banned. All federal officials were banned from DEF CON for like 3 or 4 years after that. So this has been thought of before. It's not the first time. The difference is we don't have the guardrails between these agencies and the laws that cover them like the NSA has.
Well, no, so, again, this is purposefully avoiding such guardrails.
Exactly, 100%.
So yeah, this is usually a show that, you know, presents a problem and then presents how do you deal with it kind of solution. Unfortunately, with Tales from the Dystopia, it's kind of hard to. You have Congress people, call them and talk to them. They may or may not be interested in helping you out, doing your job, protecting your privacy, whatever, but call them anyway.
Yeah, this is really the best thing you can do at this time, because it's not a fait accompli yet, right? The databases are there, but they can still be removed. But if it goes on without public notice, then they will be instituted and we don't know what they're going to do with them. And that could be really dangerous for everybody. You know, that's not just an immigration issue. It's a whole bunch of other stuff too. So
this is the way you establish a People's Republic of China social credit system.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Once that's done, say you owed $50 on your phone bill. You're a debtor. You are not a good person. You are not going to get that airplane ticket. And, you know, when it comes down to choosing who gets the upgrade, that ain't going to be you.
I think here it would be more used to deny benefits.
It could be used for a whole bunch of different things. That's the whole thing. American society is changing radically. And this is one of the tools. Like this isn't a inconvenience for Americans. This is literally a tool to change society.
Yeah, it very much is. So unfortunately, we don't have any positives to give you other than, you know, call your Congress people, because the more people call, the more light that's brought to it, the more likely they are to do something about it.
Okay. So
yeah, go ahead.
We do got to move on, but this is a story of such importance, and it's not a search engine story. It's not a marketing story. It's but it is a tech story. It's absolutely a tech story.
Yeah, definitely falls under.
And this one's tangential, but we thought it was worth noting. And incidentally, Christine, I probably owe you $5 over this. We must have made a bet on this at some time or another. It seems that they really are breaking up the Musk-Trump alliance.
A month later than I said.
The reason this is a story is because Elon Musk controls X, which is one of the largest marketing environments and largest communications tools ever invented. And because Musk, Doge, and the Trump administration, under the influence of Musk, have had such a massive impact on the tech community and
rapid order.
And the government agencies that regulate, or in this case deregulate, the tech industry. So maybe it started with a fist fight. Maybe it started with a completely inefficiently run purge of American government society. Maybe it started because they didn't really speak the same language in the first place, except money. Who knows? But the U.S. president and his major financial backer, Elon Musk, are only talking to each other, apparently through horrible and mean-spirited snipes on social media.
Yeah, so basically the story is, right now, I've heard in the press, and it could change, but that he wanted to stay on longer than the 130 days that he was allowed in the position he was given, and he was fired. He was told that it would not happen, and he would not be continuing, and that set off the whole, the bruise in the eye, which pretty sure his 5-year-old did not give him at this point, because people have reported that were there, that he got in a fisticuffs with
Treasury Secretary. No, the Treasury Secretary.
I forgot.
I forget his last name. He's a very tall, fit-looking dude.
Yeah, yeah. I just can't remember. I've been sick, so I didn't register the name. But so Doge technically is no more, except the two, excuse the words, but Big Balls, because I don't know his real name, was given a GS-15 or GS-16, and so was the other guy, position in the federal government, which is the highest that you can get. So they have no experience. They're in their 20s, and someone just gave them like a, I think it's like $180,000 or $200,000 a year job or something like that, which is just fascinating. But anyway,
somebody's got to pay for the drugs.
Yeah, exactly. So that's all collapsed. And part of the reason I put in our grid today is because with Musk having so much power in this government, he was pushing things along that benefited the tech bro crews, and that's no more. And he's even said he will no longer contribute to Republican campaigns next year. So it's the breakup's pretty massive. We'll see if it sticks, but it's a pretty big deal. So.
Okay. Moving along. This one's really interesting. It's close to home, really close to home for older SEOs who actually know the fellow, myself included. So SEO bad guy, and often depicted as SEO bad guy or digital marketing bad guy, Neil Patel, is being sued by the former crypto company FTX. You remember Sam Bankman-Fried?
Yes.
Yeah, kid with the crazy curly hair that offed with I think it was billions of dollars in a crypto scam through FTX. Well, his company hired Neil Patel's company to do marketing for them. $35 million worth of marketing. Apparently.
Oh my gosh, when he gets paid, I'm definitely upping my rates.
So he's being sued for bad marketing, apparently. I don't know exactly what they're being sued for, but Blockfolio Incorporated, the Bankman-Fried company that actually hired Patel as a marketing manager, compensating him at like $75,000 a month. Is suing him for $55 million, although Patel himself disputes that figure.
He has a quote he gave Barry. By the way, do you want to give a little background? Because his origins are in the SEO industry.
Well, yeah, I'll give you background on Neil, but it's kind of a weird one, and I apologize if it's a bit of a long story, but I knew Neil before Neil was Neil. I knew Neil before SEO was a major industry even.
Yeah.
So I worked with a company called Stepforth. Ross Dunn, the host of SEO 101, was the founder and owner of Stepforth. He's my former boss. He's the guy who brought me into the industry originally. This is back in like 2000 or maybe even just a bit before 2000. So I was head SEO at Stepforth. And I was writing articles, getting published in what was then Search Engine Watch. Getting published in Search Engine Journal. Lauren had started Search Engine Journal by then. There was maybe 20 or so major writers in the industry at this point, people like Jill Whalen or Christine Churchill, just as years and years and years ago. So Neil would call all of the writers in Search and pick their brains. He was like a 15-year-old high school kid. We had no idea who he was. He was an interesting guy. He was interested and excited about Search. He had his own really interesting theories. We were inventing the industry as we go along. And here's this high school kid who knows our writing, who's really interested in what we have to say and has really interesting stuff to add to, you know. And so you'd get on the phone with Neil and you'd find an hour and a half has gone by. But you were having such an interesting conversation and Neil's hoovering all this stuff up. So moving forward, he starts bringing himself into the industry, writing his own articles, presenting at conferences, being a person of, to be quite honest, when you get to some of these conferences and you know, the hanging out at the bar, we all become a somewhat dubious character. Mm-hmm. But you know, Neil was a guy of good character. He was a fun person to hang out with. None of the egregious stuff that we know about that allegations about Patel that are well known in the industry now were known then because they hadn't happened. I mean, the worst thing Neil did, and I'm pretty sure the statute of limitations has run out on this, was, I mean, I helped, so, stealing a whole bunch of bar from one of the Hiltons. I'm not going to say, stealing a whole bunch of booze from one of the Hiltons because they, you know, when they were renovating one of their floors, they didn't lock their room doors.
Oh.
They didn't empty the bar fridges.
I was just after those days, so we still had those days. I remember them well.
That was a great deal of fun, and there was trouble to be paid for that. But I didn't pay it. I don't think Neil paid it either.
but Neil did have some serious allegations
of
copyright, where he took other people's articles and posted them as his own. And then allegedly, though someone I know well who told me the story, then threatened to sue the person who they stole from if they sued them.
Yeah, Neil started NP Digital and was it Good Egg? Good Egg Marketing and a number of other companies. NP Digital specifically has been accused on numerous occasions of pilfering other people's content. I'm pretty sure Neil will admit himself that there are sections of NP Digital that are 100% pure content mills. It's a large company. He employs like hundreds of people around the world. I don't know the status of those employments, and I don't know how Neil is as an employer. I've not heard anything good or bad about that. I don't think I'd want to work there myself.
No, I wouldn't either.
But he has, over time, acquired the reputation as, you know, how like wrestling has good guys and bad guys. Neil would be one of the villains in the wrestling narrative. There's the weight of accusations is heavy enough that any old school SEO will probably nod their head sagely and go, yeah, I can see that. And there's a lot of people who are just, you know, very wary of association with them. Ourselves included, we had a chance to interview him in the last year or so, and the chance just sort of petered out because, you know, but anyway, Neil says that this is all a mistake. He is fighting it in court. He says that they get sued fairly frequently, as a large marketing firm will. And that's where it's sitting at now. He also says he's never actually met Sam Friedman.
And the story will go on. I'm sure we'll report on this later. He said that a whole bunch of people were being sued the same day. Just to give his words, but he wrote, "Hope all is well, Barry. Been a while since I saw you at a conference. I have no clue where people are getting this from. We aren't being sued for $55 million. People tend to forget that lawyers who took over FTX are suing, not the people who used to run FTX. If people in the organization hated the work, they wouldn't keep paying. We even won awards from Search Engine Land for it. I believe you were a judge." Wow. Whoa, that's some craft in there. Lawyers have little or no data. They deleted all the records, emails. You know, by the way, we don't know if this is true. This is just his actual statement. So if we read it, to be fair. So we're working to dismiss the case and provide the FTX lawyers with the contracts, the work results, as they have no records on their end. People deleted almost everything, so they assumed the worst. They also sued 70-plus other companies the same week. They sued us, and they called back the money. The people reporting on this online didn't know that the money they paid us for work, media spend, or what the work was. People are just assuming and don't have the details. Remember, if someone really hated the work or the results, they would stop paying you. Yes, I have never met Sam in real life. I will say one thing that is not always true. I know some people in the industry, because I've had clients who didn't know I knew the people. Not clients, people I met like in person, just randomly, have those SEOs, and the contracts were so ironclad they couldn't get out of them. So that is not always true that people fire you when they don't like the work. Sometimes they can't. I'm not saying that's true for him. I'm just saying there's an opposing view there. Anyway, that's his statement.
And for what it's worth, I saw Neil speak maybe 2 years ago at a massive conference in Toronto, and it was a really fun speech to watch. Didn't agree with all of it, but again, I don't agree with everything most SEOs say. But I really enjoyed watching him deliver it. It was engaging and dynamic, and he is a damn good speaker for and a damn good communicator for all the stuff that gets said about him, and for the myriad of accusations that have been leveled against him. Okay, speaking of someone who's developing a kind of bad reputation for himself, Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Google, was interviewed by Bloomberg's Emily Chang the other day at the Bloomberg Tech Summit in San Francisco. Fast-paced interview, covers a bunch of different topics. Absolutely talks about AI, the antitrust cases against them, etc.
The future of search, the publishers. People should read it. It's at Search Engine Roundtable. It's on Barry Schwartz. He has a video of the interview. He has a very good summary of everything that was said in the interview, so it's good to read. But it's too long for us to cover everything that he said. So basically, search is supposed to continue. Publishers will still need to exist, and AI is going to be as strong or stronger than it is currently. I think those are the three biggest points for anybody in our industry. So. See anything important I missed, Jim?
No, not at all.
And he says index pages are up 45% in 2 years, but I don't know that it means anything, because we also know from our other stories, like, 60% of the web now or 50% is AI content. So, you know, it's a thing. So anyway, but you should read it. Anyone in the industry should read it so that they have an idea of what he's talking about, where they're going.
Okay. So there's a series of changes have happened in the U.S. tax code between 2022 and the present time.
Yes. So there was an article that came out. It was in Quartz by Catherine Babb, and said that the hidden time bomb in the tax code that's fueling the mass tech layoffs. So there's been 500,000 tech people laid off, I believe, in the last year or 2 years, since 2023. So 500,000 tech workers have been laid off. People thought it was pandemic or AI. Apparently, no, that's not what's going on. For 70 years in the U.S. tax code, American companies could deduct 100% of qualified research and development, this is from our article, spending in the year that they incurred the costs. That was removed when the current president was president the first time in the 10-year tax plan, but it didn't go into effect until, I think it was in the last 2 to 3 years. Yeah. So they basically eliminated the 100% deduction for the people doing research and development in tech companies, which means they had to lay off people because now they couldn't afford the research and development people. And so the tech person who's lost their job, there's a really good chance it's because the tax code, and something people need to understand in the United States, which I think a lot of people do not, you only make the tax budget every 10 years. So this is not, even though it happened under the Biden administration did not create the tax code. The tax code was created under the first Trump administration. So what you see in the last 10 years, anything related to the budget and taxes, is because of the Trump administration the first go around. So it's called Section 174. Congress right now is trying to do something about it, but I don't know if it has any bipartisan support. But it is really important to understand that you probably lost your job because of this change in the tax code, not because of the pandemic or AI.
Actually, for what it's worth, the pandemic and AI have contributed to loss of tech jobs in several other countries, so it's likely that they contributed to loss of tech jobs in the United States, but
this is why half a million people would
definitely for real issue that most people wouldn't have thought to look at.
Yeah, exactly. So, important story.
Okay, and other things working to get themselves a bad reputation. Reddit is suing Anthropic for using Reddit data, and more importantly, Redditors' personal data. without permission to train an Anthropic. Now, I mean, Reddit wrote a long post on this. The owners of Reddit wrote a long post, and they sounded so dejected, so upset, so betrayed by Anthropic. They thought that Anthropic would be better than this, that Anthropic was a white knight in the community, which they trusted, which they completely trusted. But Anthropic's bots have actually accessed or tried to access Reddit content hundreds of thousands of times, undermining the company's allegedly, undermining the trust between Reddit and Anthropic. Now, Claude is supposed to be a damn good AI, but if you pissed off Reddit, you've pissed off the progressive side of the web.
Yeah, also, you know, Anthropic does present themselves as supposedly the transparent, more honest company when it comes to AI. So this is definitely a mark on their reputation that they were training without permission and or knowledge and crawling Reddit hundreds of thousands of times. So we'll see where it goes. It's in court. I don't know what the ask is in court, except punitive damages and restitution, but it doesn't say exactly how much. So, but I, you know, it's a thing that we don't deal with because it's tech and we overlook it. But the only way these models exist is training on other people's works and content and then creating new things out of it. And Google's whole AI mode is we trained on our index and now we're repurposing all your content for no clicks for you, but good for us. Right. So there is an ethical issue in this, the training of these things.
Part of the problem with that being an ethical issue now is I almost feel like that horse has so far left the barn, been flogged and shot to death by court rulings that give AI companies and they're not just in the United States. There was a court ruling in the UK 2 months ago that give AI companies carte blanche to train on stuff that's on the web. It's almost like if stuff's on the web, there's no copyright attached to it. You could just go at it. That seems to be the new rule.
Yeah, and the problem is that if I was a person who went into like a bookstore, took all the books and repurposed them into Cliff Notes books and opened a Cliff Notes bookstore, I'd be shut down in a day, right? But it's the same thing. It's just that it's tech and it was a gray area and there's a loophole. And so it has to go through the courts and that takes years and years and years and years. So unfortunately, by that time, the damage is already done.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, so moving right along, and honestly, goodness, this is not the dystopia part of the show. We ended that a little bit back. Pretty soon, your Amazon packages may be delivered by a humanoid-like robot jumping out of an Amazon van to do the last 100 yards or so of the delivery between street and your front door.
All I got to say real quick is I lived in rural Virginia for a while. For a long time, my parents had a store in the country. I had a roadside store, you know, complete with animals and a Christmas shop. I hope these are bulletproof because I can see target practice, you know, instead of the stop signs, they'll shoot the humanoid. Half joking, half serious. I would not want one of these things showing up at my door. What do you think, Jim?
To be honest, aside from the loss of employment opportunities for a already struggling population, I'm neutral on it. Actually, I think it's probably infinitely more efficient. It'll probably cut gas usage. It'll probably get things delivered a lot faster. There'll be hiccups at the very beginning, but
why would it be faster? It's just that there's driving.
You can absolutely optimize the behavior of machines. You cannot not optimize the behavior of humans. You can keep the machines running 24/7. You cannot keep the machines humans running 24/7. Machines don't need to take lunch or bathroom breaks. So all of that put together at massive scale will absolutely deliver individual units faster. But it comes at a major cost. Society will, without jobs for people, a major foundation in society is removed. And that's my biggest problem with this and much of the automation that's coming through AI or through machine learning or through robotics. The techno side of me is fascinated by, and I think it's, you know, I think it's wonderful. The engineering side of me thinks this is much more efficient than human labor. But the sociologist in me, the person who takes political science seriously, it terrifies me.
Well, and also, you know, they did a study recently. It came out last year. That did you know that the little minute touches in your daily life, like your cashier, your driver, your coffee shop person, your delivery person, actually improve mental health? So well, if your interactions are not with a human who comes to your door and says, hey, how was your day? It's nice to see you again, and moves on, and it's a robot, then it actually could have mental health effects on the people.
Yeah, but I also have to assume that if we have robotics doing a bunch of our drudge work, that we'll be out doing other things ourselves. It doesn't necessarily mean we're going to be shut-ins watching TV only. And if that is the choice we make, that's, you know, I don't know what to say about that. Yeah.
But that's not
free people up from drudgery, and maybe they'll go play tennis more often.
Well, but you think that people don't like their jobs.
I do.
A lot of drivers like their jobs.
Oh, yeah, but I think most of them would rather go play tennis or fish or go paint something or just anything other than the drudgery of having to do.
The problem is they don't have a salary, so they wouldn't be able to do that. So anyway, the thing is,
as I said, our society is changing rapidly, and they're not going to have a salary. Whether we like the change or dislike the change is still going to happen.
No, the change is not inevitable. The change is determined by the people, because if people don't want this, it won't happen.
Sure.
It won't.
The change is not determined by the people in this case either. What the people want is the package delivered to their front door, and they don't really care otherwise, especially if they don't got a tip.
The point, you don't have to tip on Amazon anyway here. The point being is that the number one job in the United States is driver.
Yeah.
This kind of thing is, it may be great for the company. It's not great for anybody else.
There's a trucking corridor between Houston and Austin. That's one of the most heavily traveled trucking corridors in the United States. I guess Houston and Austin are places where Amazon has a lot of stuff fly into and has a lot of fulfillment centers that they distribute out from. So massive truck traffic along this corridor. Much of that truck traffic is now automated. Driverless trucks, or at least there's an experiment in driverless trucks where there's somebody sitting in the truck, but they're not touching the wheel. A couple of years from now, assuming kinks get worked out of that system, those driver jobs are gone. And once those driver jobs are gone, imagine everything outside of tightly knit urban areas. This is happening. And you're right, it's the number one job in the United States is transporting stuff. Terrifying.
Yeah, it is, very much so.
So humanoid robots may soon be jumping out of Amazon vans to deliver your packages, especially in the last 100 yards or 50 yards or whatever between curb and doorstop. yeah, this is, again, like it or lump it, this is real.
Yeah, well, we'll see. It's still in testing. So, if they're testing in a coffee shop size space, so the machine learning can understand all the little tricks of having to move in urban environments.
So, if you own the largest communications platform to ever exist, which incidentally isn't Elon Musk anymore, it's Elon Musk's company, X.AI, that owns Twixter. Elon Musk doesn't own Twixter anymore. At least not directly. He owns X.AI, and X.AI owns Twixter. And now, having changed its terms of service, X, or Twixter, has disallowed third parties from using the platform's content to train large language models. So, if you're training at Twitter, and you're not Grok or XAI, you're breaking the terms of service, but they'll happily train on you.
Of course, yeah. And they train on individuals, you know, that use the platform. So I do still use it for reasons. But so it's interesting. It's interesting how the training on the people that use the platform companies are now not happy that people are training on their platforms.
Well, competition is... dangerous, unless you're the one barging your way into the market, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think anybody ever accused the tech bros of loving their competition.
No, that's very true.
Okay, so guess what, listeners? Everything hereafter is like directly search related. I love this part of the show. Honestly, Christine, I remember like in the olden days, we reported on stuff that was fun and fascinating and interesting and legitimately making the world a better place. At least we believed it was. You know, I remember at the time when we actually thought giving people more information would make them smarter.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. We were dumb, weren't we?
We try to find quirky stories. This is not a quirky week, unfortunately. There's a couple, though, in there.
Okay, so Microsoft, or Bing, is testing a new layout in the search engine for a people always ask section. They're getting rid of the carousel card format, and they're going to use a list view, which is their folders, so you can expand that and you see the dates and all that sort of stuff. So it looks like Microsoft is going to make Bing look a little bit like Windows, which is cool.
Make it look like Windows.
Well, you use iOS.
I don't use
right?
Windows. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you use Windows, they have a really unique file formatting system that. This sounds like a direct crib off of their file sorting system. You can expand and contract the way you look at files, look at like large details where you get like specific dates and stuff. And if Microsoft is testing list views, they're probably also going to give you much more information that they have about the file, like when they first crawled it or something.
Gotcha. Well, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, that is a great idea.
Yeah.
Okay, so Microsoft is turning Copilot into a chatbot with its invitation, chat with Copilot.
It's coffee and biscuits. Yeah, I should offer that. People need to start being cuter with this stuff. I still say Microsoft missed when they didn't add a new Clippy with chat instead of Copilot. Just make it Clippy. The chat with Copilot just appears in the search result like a box, text box in the input field where you can ask questions. So it's not too intrusive.
But again, the cool thing, it's going to remember your conversations. It'll build on its memories of the conversation. And hopefully as time goes on, it will ground itself in your editing of the reality it constructs. And that's something I think that people who are using chatbots need to understand. You need to edit reality based on mistakes you find. Get rid of them. Tell them it's a mistake. Let it know and be very explicit.
And Jim, go ahead.
I just want to caveat this. It may or may not actually correct itself in the long run. But if you leave the hallucination alone, it's likely to continue making it or continue promoting it.
So I want to interject something here. It is not on the grid. I apologize. I totally missed this, and you just reminded me of it. When you're chatting, I'm just going to throw this in real quick. OpenAI is now fighting a court order that it has to preserve all ChatGPT user logs, including deleted chats and sensitive chats, logged to its API business offering. So anything you put into OpenAI could wind up saved and possibly in court. When you're talking about chatbots. But now this is like a court order. This isn't like they were deleting things, but they're not allowed. They may not be allowed to anymore.
Oh yeah, here's what I'm saying. You can't delete time. I don't mean to suggest you can delete it, but you can tell your chat that was incorrect, and you do not want that direction. You cannot once something's in the machine. I don't know how you get it out.
You don't get it out. But they weren't saving it like to you. Like when you're in OpenAI and you're using ChatGPT and it saves things, or you say don't save it. They might have to save everything and actually deleted data, things deleted intentionally. They might have to also save, because the news organizations are suing OpenAI based on, of course, the training that they did. And they believe there's punitive costs. There should be punitive damages because it's cost them a lot of money. So anyway, you're talking about the response to the chatbot and you're talking to chatbot. I was like, oh yeah, I totally forgot to put this in the grid. So I apologize. Yeah. So everything you put in, chatbot, be careful, because like people thought they were safe from the stuff in OpenAI being saved because they're using the paid version and they were told it wouldn't be put anywhere, but now they may have to save everything and produce everything for court. So
Quick breaking news addendum to a story we had on earlier about the breakup between Elon and Donald Trump. Donald Trump posted to Truth Social 3 minutes ago. The easiest way to save money in our budget, billions and billions of dollars, is to terminate Elon's government subsidies and contracts. Ooh, I was always surprised that Biden didn't do it.
Whoa, is that the real breakup? Oh, wow. So we don't usually do breaking news on the show because we're not live. But,
This just happened. Just came up in my news feed just a second ago. That ding you heard in the background, was that coming up?
That's worth reporting on. So, and for those who don't know, he gets like 30, what does he get? $38 million a day in government contract money. Like, he's only rich because of government contract money.
Okay, this may or may not be a reality. It may just be something that Trump posted in Truth Social, because Trump often posts stuff in Truth Social that doesn't actually happen.
But the breakup is real. People today on the news were like, is it really real? Or is this just, no, it's real.
It seems to be.
Yes. Yeah, that could get very interesting.
Okay, so Google says it's updated Gemini 2.50 Pro AI, and Pro, remember the paid version, not the free one that you guys are scarfing off of your Google accounts. 2.50 Pro AI model is better at coding. Better than who? Maybe George down the block. But companies did an updated preview building on the upgrade to 2.5 Pro. Now it's even better. So there you go.
There you go.
I think the new world of prompted coding both fascinates and frightens me at the same time. But we're here, so it's our whole relationship with how things are built has been changed.
Well, just to remind people, be careful if you're putting something out and you don't know how to code. You are legally responsible for what it does, which means if it causes damage or harm, you could be personally sued. So if you don't know how to code, it'd be a really good idea. Make it for yourself, but don't put it out there for everybody else.
This might sound really boring, okay? But we should probably sometime in the future do a show on acquiring business insurance. Because you know one industry that is going to boom with people using AI to do business? Is the business insurance industry.
Yeah, probably do.
Honestly, yeah. I just went and upgraded my business insurance like 3 months ago, and it was a Byzantine exercise. And oh my God, there's stuff I wish I'd known before getting it engaging.
Well, we could do one of our side specials and make it an hour long. Maybe have a couple of people on about those kind of things.
It's a boring subject, but this is stuff you need to know to do business, right?
Yeah, very true.
Okay, so if you. Of course. It's funny because you're reading the headline going along and your brain goes, well, yeah. Okay, so Google's telling you, your page needs to be indexed to be shown in AI mode.
Yes.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, I like...
How could it not be?
Well, because people don't understand how it works. So people still think that the large language model comes around and crawls you like Google does. And as long as you're available to it, then it doesn't matter. The rest doesn't matter. But all large language models use a search engine to pull back documents. And so if you're not indexed in that search engine, you wouldn't be able to be pulled in as a citation.
Yeah.
So that's why that's important. So.
Okay, so if you want to be part of AI mode, if you want to be part of generative AI responses, you need to have your website wide open to crawling.
Well, and done well for crawling. This is a new thing, Jim. You can offer this too. I'm giving you an idea for a new product. Auditing sites to make sure that they are capable to be read by the large language models. So, like, they don't read JavaScript. Mm-hmm. They have to have certain structures, certain schemas, things like that. So, and if you
for what it's worth, Gemini does read through JavaScript now.
It does
Gemini's,
on a website.
Gemini's claiming it totally does. Mm-hmm.
Okay, they were saying in large rental part they didn't, but either way, I'd have to look it up to know. So I'm not saying you're wrong. But how it goes is your website has to be prepped for it. I will say though, for one thing, because there's been a lot of hype this week because of the Google I.O., what was it, a week ago? Weeks ago? That these models, not Google or Bing, but outside of Google or Bing, they only refer 1% to 2% traffic. So I see a lot of client people and people talking about clients that they're all freaked out. They have to get into the large language models. And it's like, yeah, maybe for some brand awareness or something, but they're not referring traffic. Now for Google and Bing, yes, of course. But so just people know that it's still more important for you to be optimized for Google and Bing than it is to be worried about OpenAI chatbots, ChatGPT.
I agree with that too. But then if you're working at a site that, you know, legitimately has hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of visitors a day, 1% is a lot.
Yeah, that's like the top 10% of sites.
Right now, one of my websites registers clicks per day or visits per day in the millions. And this is a venue I cannot ignore. And it's also a venue I believe that we're losing traffic to. I just can't prove it.
Oh, yeah.
So this is zero click traffic. Absolutely zero. And in fact, hell of a segue into our next story, the great decoupling of in Search Console, the great decoupling of clicks and impressions.
Well,
you know, for the longest time, clicks and impressions, the purple and blue lines in Search Console, total opposite, by the way, in Bing Webmaster Tools. But, you know, those two lines tended to mirror each other. An upward slash in impressions tended to produce an upward slash in clicks, and vice versa, downward slash in impressions would produce a downward slash in clicks. In many cases, that seems to have decoupled with a mass surge in impressions, but the floor falling out of clicks.
Yeah, it's similar to when we actually saw this like a month ago, remember? We were like, yes, mm-hmm. That's why. But yeah, when you have a new site, this happens frequently because Google would have like the carousels and in the past, and then like half your image would be in the carousel and half wouldn't. So people didn't click on it because they didn't really see the story title. And so you'd be like, I have 2 million impressions and 50 clicks, right? It's that kind of thing. So when I started seeing this difference, I knew it was the same thing. It's the AI overview is taking the, you're taking the click, and so you're getting an impression. Also, you get an impression when you, remember we talked about this a couple weeks ago, when you open up the AI overview is an impression. So if someone just hits click, and it doesn't even read the whole thing, but if you're a link in the citation there, you will get an impression. Uh-huh. But you may not get a click. And a new thing I saw, and maybe it's not new, and I was just because I was sick, but if I click on the little icon now in the search, it opens up a panel on the right that gives me like a couple of items, a couple of websites. So it doesn't go directly to a website anymore. It goes to a panel on the right and shows you a couple, two websites.
But those websites have just registered an impression, each of them.
Yes, all of them have registered an impression, yes. I will say the click open on the right is much more likely to get a click than the icon itself. Because once you realize the icon opens up other pages, you'll be more likely to click the icon than you would before. And the other pages are relevant. I will say this is a personal theory. I do think there's been a decline in the quality of the search results to make AI overviews get more traffic. Cause I'll do a query and I'll get like two links that are relevant and like eight that have nothing to do with anything I typed in, but the AI overview is spot on. Onto what I typed in, and I do think it's possible that they're degrading search to make AI overviews more popular.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that they're actively degrading search to make AI overviews more popular. Although I do think that different criteria and machine learning, and maybe we talked about this like in the past, has changed the nature of search results. But as Google gets to know its users infinitely better now than they did before. I think those are going to become better suited to Google's impression of the user themselves. Neat thing I've found in my publishing clients, that digression with the, you know, massive increase in impressions and decrease in clicks holds true almost every time. With my e-com clients, not so much. There's actually still a lot of click activity that seems to be following the exact pattern of impression activity, although it's inarguable we're seeing slightly fewer actual clicks.
That's because the AI overviews only appear from the research that they've been putting out on about 3 to 4% of queries, where on informational it's much, much higher.
And also in e-com, when it comes right down to it, Google still does not control the purchase process.
Right.
You need to go to whatever branded website to make that actual purchase. So e-com, as long as Google isn't like, and we're selling through Google Merchant, like we're selling through Google stores and all that sort of stuff. But as long as they still need to go to my clients' pages to make their real purchase, or they feel more comfortable doing that, e-com is still going to see a much higher level of clicks than standard publishing will.
That's very true. So we're going to come close on time. Do you mind if I lead us through these last stories kind of quickly?
Yeah, go for it.
I'll treat them all like 1 minute stories because they don't really need to be elaborated on. So Google updates ranking algorithm for explicit content and videos while updating saved search docs. So basically, if you are you have a site that works in the areas of sexual content, nudity, sex toys, sex-oriented dating services, violence or gore, things like that, they're under safe search. And if you want Google to crawl your site, you have to make sure that it's been given permission to get beyond the age gate if you're age gating your content. And then there's a couple of new sections. User-generated harmful content. Let's see.
So how do you give those permissions? Like is there a tag or?
They don't say in the article, so I'd have to go look at the technical on it because I haven't worked on a site like this in years.
So send Google permission in an unmarked brown paper bag.
Yeah, but it's probably similar to how they do for news publishers. News publishers have to give Google ability to get around their paywalls, so it's probably very similar. Okay, so let's move on to the next one. Google is testing AI overviews at the bottom of the page. Barry reported on this story, Barry Schwartz from SE Roundtable, and he's not sure if it's a bug or real. But it does.
I'm sure it's real. I just don't think they're going to keep up with it.
No, I don't either. I don't either. But, you know, the AI overviews with AI mode really puts them back in antitrust, legal antitrust territory. So they could be testing them whether it does well. So they don't have another lawsuit. I think they have 6 right now. But we don't know. We don't know. But that would be just my theory if it's legit. Google search results, snippets, test clickable page includes. That's one of those titles that like hurts my brain. So there's going to be these. Page includes, like, I don't know how to describe it when you don't have a visual in front of you.
We know you like search results, so we put more search results in your search results.
There you go. Thank you. So the page includes search results snippet and Google search. They're making the clickable links that go to more search results. Remember one time you go to a search result and a search result and a search result? Fortunately, it was in Google Labs and it never made it live. Next is Google's Gemini Live, available on Gemini app. So there is on the Gemini app, if you're using it, the ability to use things like Lens on your Gemini Live now. Where you point, the Gemini Live is based on the idea that you're pointing your smartphone camera at something and trying to get information. So that is available now. Anything to add, Jim?
I think that's very cool. Honestly, that is very cool. Watch out for the obvious misuses of it. People taking pictures of your home, people taking pictures of you on the subway or whatever. But I think all in all, this is a very cool feature.
It is very cool. Google is testing a blue quick view button on popular product listings in search. So if it's a little blue button at the bottom of the item in the product listings with the pictures and the reviews. Okay, cool. Quick view, sounds good. I use quick view in e-commerce sites all the time. Google Lens comes to YouTube Shorts. So this is also kind of a similar concept. You can pause the YouTube short, you can circle a portion of the video and Google Lens will search for it. The problem with Google Lens though, we've talked about this before. I often just get products and no information on what I'm actually trying to find. Google said it will only show organic results though and no ads, but that can change.
And of course the problem with YouTube Shorts is if you're watching them, you're a crack addict. Cause that's what YouTube Shorts are. They're total crack for the brain.
Yeah, the reels and TikTok.
I hate reels and shorts, but I'm addicted to them and I hate them.
Every morning. But I do go to TikTok. Somehow I wind up in Reels when I'm in TikTok. I have not figured out how that happens yet. Now we have Google may extend the Google search box to see more of the query. So basically they're opening up the search box to act like a prompt. So you can put up to 2,000 characters in there.
That actually makes a lot of sense, given this is how people are going to be, you know, searching and then expanding the search, then expanding the search. That's got to have an effect on query composition.
Yeah, definitely. And then they're going to open it up so can people act like a prompt. I realize that your query acts like a prompt with AI overviews. It's not just a query. So, and then AI overview test query expansion tabs. And we know that Google measures their success in their earnings calls by how many queries happen. That was Sundar's.
Queries give you real estate.
Yeah. So Google needs even more queries. Very being funny. The 10% of growth wasn't enough. So Google AI Overviews is testing query expansion tabs at the bottom, at the top of the overview. So basically, there's a little pill button there, and then you click on them to get more information.
Last week, walking around the party with the "Ask me about my fun" button sign.
Exactly. And before we go, just something that I'd like to throw out there. There's been this whole chat in the industry about changing the name of search from SEO to GEO and all this. And I just want to tell our listeners out there, and Jim, jump in wherever you want to, and this will be quick. The stuff that you think is new isn't new. They added fan out's been part of large language models since forever, but they added fan out in 2015 when they had people also ask. That's fan out. They added entities and related entities in 2011 when they went from Bag of Words to Hummingbird, and then when they went to BERT in 2018. BERT was the first large language model in 2018. So everything that people are saying to do now for this supposed GEO, Google's been putting into the search for 10 years, 11 years, 13 years, actually, if you talk about going from Bag of Words to natural language understanding and natural language processing. Like if you're writing for chunking and you're putting your HTML in so that you have bullets and things, that was featured snippets. That was requirements for featured snippets, passages as well. So all of this has been a part of search for quite some time and in different levels, a couple of years to, the NLU, natural language understanding processing in 2012, 13. So the stuff that SEOs see because of Google I/O, they think is new because they didn't hear about it before, but it's actually been being added by Google for anywhere from 7 to 13 years.
Well, the old SEO the SEO adage is everything old is new again. We often recycle our advice. And the reason we do this is because the old advice actually works. Okay, so really strong site structure. Logical progression from A to B to C to D. Make it a fast site. Make it work really well in the mobile environment. Make it a really good user experience. And explain your content with as much expertise and as much openness as you possibly can. Get reviews from other users. These are all things that we've been saying for years and years and years. Use markup language to better contextualize and distinctualize your content. This is all stuff we've been saying for years and years and years. Why are we rehashing it and giving it a new name? Because that's marketing. Do we need the new name? I don't know. Maybe not right now. Maybe in the future. I don't know.
Because GEO is generative, and we're not optimizing for the generative model. And all this stuff in Google with large language models and AI and machine learning have been started in 2013, 2012. So it's not new. BERT is, most people don't know about BERT, and BERT was the first large language model, and it is the origin point of ChatGPT and the others because of the way it allowed them to accelerate processing language because they were able to disambiguate a word from a sentence and go either direction.
We're out of here any second. The one we are with absolute certainty is branding is where it's at.
Yes.
Morty is absolutely right on this. In the new search paradigm that we're entering, they're going to the information's coming to them one way or another. It's a jambalaya mishmash of all information that's out there. But make sure that click is branded to you.
Yes, I would totally agree. And
you,
as Pedro said, we both do have technical SEO, you and me. Pedro used to work at Google, and I'm sorry, right now I'm spacing on his last name. Put in LinkedIn this week that every team needs to have technical SEOs. That is the most important thing on your team right now, which is not usually how it goes. But I think he's correct, because you have to have what you just said, the structure, the modeling, the technical, the schema, those kind of things have to be correct for the large language model to properly interpret the content on your page. So,
yeah. And on that, we have gone full clock.
Yes,
we've got to get out of here. We got another show coming up right behind us in the studio. So friends, you have been listening to Webcology, recorded live to podcast on the 5th of June, 2025. This is on behalf of Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. It's a rough time out there, friends. Be patient with each other. Be kind. Explain yourself well. Rank well. And we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.